This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Live on tape from the Ed Sullivan Theater in New York City, it's Stephen
Colbert. There all around the world to The Late Show. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert, and I just want to start off tonight with an early blooming bouquet of happy Fridays to one and all. It is good to have you here because I know everyone in my audience and everyone on my staff are fully vaxxed to the maxed. Unfortunately, that's not the case everywhere. Last week, the Supreme Court struck down Biden's vaccine mandate for large businesses. And shortly thereafterwards, Starbucks announced it is no longer requiring employees to get vaccinated or submit to weekly testing, which is huge because they have over 9,000 U.S. coffee shops, and that's just in a two-block radius around the Ed Sullivan Theater. This, drink our coffee. This policy has a big impact on the American workforce because Starbucks employs 200,000 workers, and it seems like none of them are working on your order, even though you're pretty sure that lady who just got the cake pops came in after you. Sous vide egg bites. Where's my sous vide egg bites? In a memo, Starbucks COO tried to have it both ways, explaining, "While the vaccine rule is now paused, I want to emphasize that we continue to believe strongly in the spirit and intent of the mandate, because nothing says you believe in a rule like no longer having it." It's like telling your landlord, "Listen, I want you to know that I believe in this building's no pet policy, even though I've adopted a Bengal tiger." She smells you, run! The COO also, down. CEO also emphasized that more than 90% of Starbucks workers in the United States had disclosed their vaccination status. But notably, he wouldn't say what percent of those workers are not fully vaccinated. Yeah, not particularly comforting. "Hey, before we make love, I want you to know that I took an STD test and I know for certain whether or not I have one. Now let me just dim the lights before you get a good look at what we're dealing with here." You like Jackson Pollock? You a big fan of Jackson Pollock, are you? We here at the Columbia Broadcasting Syndicate want you to know that The Late Show is not only safe, it's 100% free 5 days a week. How do we do it?
By you!
Now, unfortunately, not every entertainment platform is quite so generous to its people. This week, it was announced that Netflix is raising their prices. And if you're concerned about what that means for the Netflix account that you use, don't worry. That's your ex-boyfriend's mom's problem. She's very nice. Very nice.
Everybody counts right. All over the place.
With the new prices, the cost for their most expensive premium plan increased $2 to $19.99 a month. For comparison, Hulu costs $12.99, Disney Plus costs $7.99, and Crackle's plan is still, "We'll pay you, for God's sake, just tell people we're still here." And whatever it costs to get Paramount Plus, it's worth it. Paramount Plus, a mountain of contractually obligated plugs. Now, make it so. There's big news in NFTs. And for those of you who are wondering what an NFT is, look it up and tell me, because I don't get it, even though it's been explained to me many times, one time by me. Well, whatever they are, it was just announced that New York's first NFT restaurant is coming soon. The restaurant, which is called Flyfish Club, doesn't have a location yet, but the founders have announced that the menu is seafood inspired. So, goldfish crackers? Seafood inspired isn't a thing. No one wants to take a bite of something and say, wow, that really reminds me of a shrimp. So to recap, we don't know where this restaurant will be or what they will serve. Let's see if one of their founders can explain.
Flyfish Club is gonna be a modern interpretation of everything that you love and appreciate when you walk into a restaurant, but turned upside down, on its face, and inside out.
That's right, upside down, on its face, inside out, backside, front side, lefty-tighty, righty-loosey. Everything about this restaurant is so backwards, you're gonna eat with your butt and poop out your mouth. Who's hungry? It's crazy. It's crazy. It's insane. You're going to need to be medicated. You're going to have bowls of Zoloft. Now, if you want to get your non-existent seat at the made-up table, it's going to set you back because right now, a regular membership goes for about $7,900 in cryptocurrency, and the higher-level omakase membership goes for roughly $13,000. Or you can go to Red Lobster and be a douchebag for free. And I, what's this? Hold on, excuse me, what's this? Yes, okay, firstly, I'm being told that I do not have an earpiece. And second, it's time for a late show comeuppance watch. Now, regular viewers know that comeuppance watch is a segment we've never done before. In it, we outline powerful men who are on the verge of getting their comeuppance. And tonight, we're very close to discovering the identities of some of the friends of billionaire sexual predator and all-around horrible former human being, Jeffrey Epstein. Last month, Epstein's former accomplice, Ghislaine, prisoner number 405, was found guilty of 5 federal charges and is facing 65 years in jail. And even though the names of Epstein's pals were sealed in a previous case, Maxwell's lawyers say she will no longer fight to keep the names of 8 John Does a secret. Which means... soon, a comeuppance could be uppance coming. And these John Does could be any number of powerful men who have been seen repeatedly with Epstein. Former President Bill Clinton. The other former president, the former Alan Dershowitz, former Microsoft CEO Bill Gates, or part-time clarinetist Woody Allen. If it's revealed that one of the John Does is Woody Allen, it could ruin his reputation. Of course, one man we do know spent a lot of time with Jeffrey Epstein is Andrew. You guys know Andrew?
Yeah.
You might know him as Prince Andrew. But last week, in light of his sexual assault trial, the Queen stripped him of his titles. Now, a new documentary in the United Kingdom is outlining some of Andrew's unusual bedroom habits. No, not those. Although, yeah, probably those. I mean, in this case, his teddy bear collection. Former royal staffer Paul Page explains.
He had about 50 or 60 stuffed toys positioned on the bed. And basically, there was a card the inspector showed us in a drawer, and it's a picture of these bears all in situ on the bed. And the reason for the laminated picture was that if those bears weren't put back in the right order by the maids, he would shout and scream and become verbally abusive.
Wow. This new Paddington movie seems a lot darker than the originals. We got a great show for you tonight.
Coming up, meanwhile.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Happy Happy Friday. Happy Friday. We made it through another one.
Made it through the week.
You know, one of the reasons why I can make it to every Friday is that I know I get to do it for a Friday crowd.
Oh, yeah. Friday audience is so hyped.
They're the blood in my veins.
Yeah. Energy.
And also, tonight, one of my favorite musical artists of all time is here. Elvis Costello is here.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Yes, Elvis Costello is incredible.
Folks, you know, I spent a lot of my time right over there. Sorting through the day's top stories, carefully selecting for you the freshest, most topical news fruit, artfully carving it into satirical shapes, dipping it in the finest artisanal chocolate, and gently placing them into the flawlessly composed and delicious edible arrangement that is my nightly monologue. But sometimes, just sometimes, folks, I wake up face down in the recycling bin behind a Jamba Juice. Fight a seagull for the discarded cantaloupe rinds and pineapple stems, dip it in a buckle of diesel siphoned off from a semi full of unwashed bird bones, which I use to skewer together my garbage kebab and stab them onto a waterlogged teddy bear to create the criminally insane nightmare gift basket of news that is my segment. Meanwhile, age cannot wither nor custom stale its infinite variety. Meanwhile, we've all been closely following Machine Gun Kelly and Megan Fox's engagement. After drinking each other's blood, as you do, Machine Gun Kelly designed Megan Fox's ring with thorns so it hurts to take off. It makes sense. As the old saying goes, if you love something, drink its blood, then make it fear harm if it tries to leave, then it's yours. Meanwhile, climate activist Greta Thunberg just had a newly discovered frog named after her. Pristimantis Greta Thunbergi was discovered in a mountain range in Panama. Well, that's very nice. I also happen to have a couple of members of the animal kingdom named after me, such as Aptostichus Stephen Colberti and the Venezuelan diving beetle Agaporomorphus Colberti, known for its extremely complicated male genitalia. I mean, it's not a contest, Greta, but how messed up is your frog's genitals? That's what I thought. Now, due to their relative places in the food chain, Greta's frogs pose a direct threat to my bugs. So this is a warning. You keep that slimy toad away from my bugs, Greta, or I'll pop open a cast of Eleodes colberti on your ass. Yes, it's a wasp, and I control them with my mind like Aquaman. Meanwhile, Ant-Man controls the bugs, not Aquaman. Aquaman controls them with his abs. Meanwhile, in gross news, an Ohio salon owner has unveiled a 225-pound ball of human hair that broke the Guinness World Record. And here's a look at it in action. If you think that's big, you should see the cat that coughed this thing up. Meanwhile, there's a breakthrough in male contraception because in an experiment with rodents, scientists discovered that warm balls could be the next male birth control. And it's so simple. Scientists were able to temporarily and reversibly reduce fertility merely by injecting mice with iron oxide nanoparticles, placing a magnet next to their balls for 4 hours to attract the particles, then wrapping an electric coil around the testicles and warming the balls up to temperatures between 98 and 113 degrees. Okay, obviously that sounds great. But am I the only one here wondering how the mice feel about this? Hey, I don't want to seem like I'm not a team player with these electric coils on my junk, but is it too late to volunteer to have mascara rubbed into my eyes? Now, fellas, if you're watching, before you run down to CVS to check out the iron oxide nanoparticle aisle, in some of the tests, the balls atrophied. And if they were cooked above 113 degrees, the balls didn't recover. Until it's perfected, men will have to rely on the tried and true male contraceptive, telling your date about blockchain.
Coming up, Elvis Costello.
Hey everyone, it's David Duchovny. Do you ever feel like a failure? Trust me, I get it. Hell, I've spent my whole life almost feeling like a failure. It's appropriate though, because on Fail Better, my new podcast with Lemonada Media, exploring the world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives, is the whole point. Each week I'll chat with artists, athletes, actors, and experts about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, I hope we can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out on May 7th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen, my guest tonight is a Grammy Award-winning songwriter and Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, who is one of my favorite musicians ever. Please welcome back to The Late Show, Elvis Costello. Lovely to see you again.
Lovely to see you.
I want to ask you about this photo right here. What is going on? It's been called a pirate radio broadcast. What does that mean?
Well, when I was in Liverpool just before Christmas, so not long before. Christmas of this year. I know it's hard to keep track.
Yep.
I discovered a record shop, an independent record shop in Smithtown Road, Liverpool 15, mm-hmm. about half a mile from where my mother was born. And I thought, if I ever have the opportunity, I want to put this place on the map for people who still like to buy records on vinyl. And then I thought, the owner, Graham, had the very good fortune to say, you know, there's a little bit of recording equipment downstairs. And I thought, maybe I could have my own radio station for one night, except, of course, these days, you have to do it over YouTube. And heaven knows, they steal enough money from us, so I thought I'd get a bit of it back by going on there. And we set up down in that basement last Saturday night, my stage manager, Toast.
His name is Toast?
Toast, yeah. Had the room perfectly lit. We're mood lighting, as you see. And I proceeded to play records for the next 3.5 hours. And we were, 3.5 hours. Yeah, like a proper radio. Yeah,
sure.
And I was playing everything. I was playing songs from our new record, The Boy Named If. Yep. I was playing songs from our last release, The Spanish Model, which is a remix of this year's model from 1978 with... We discovered the thing that had been holding it back, my voice, and took it off and put a cast of Spanish artists on it. And I got to play some of my friends, my new friends, who sang on that record. I got to play some of their songs. I got to play a 7-minute piece that T-Bone Burnett gave me that's never been heard anywhere in the world, mm-hmm. with Black Thought and DJ Premier and Cassandra Wilson. So it was a whole evening of music that I wanted to play. And... it was spectacular because we were having people type in, I'm listening in Patagonia or I'm listening in St. Petersburg. I got up at 4 o'clock in the morning in Tokyo to watch you. And, it's not the sort of thing that becomes a viral sensation, but it was tremendous fun. And if I may just indulge a little sentimental, maybe to some people, or at least real emotional moment, it's a year next week since I lost my mam. And she was a gramophone record assistant.
A gramophone?
Record assistant. This is a keep up, Stephen. This is a very important
task. That's a highly technical job.
Highly technical.
Yeah, what did a gramophone record assistant do?
Well, plays records and has...
Assisted playing records.
Actually physically put them on and with the needle. So, really, I got my lesson.
For whom? Who does she do that for?
Well, for customers that came into the shop. We're talking way back now. We're talking back like 1943. She was 14 years old. So... she did that job until I was a young boy and then took care of me. And that was, believe me, a handful, always. That was a difficult full-time job. Mm-hmm. But I thought, when somebody passes, and she was 93, so, she had a wonderful mm-hmm. life. What is better than playing music? You have some Irish in you, don't you?
100%, yeah.
100%, yeah. I have a son who's more Irish than me, so there's the beginning of an Irish tale, to say the least. Try and work that one out, yeah. I had a wake, really, basically. Mm-hmm. But I didn't play any sad music. I played all joyful rock and roll, like with the Imposters. I played some of the records I wanted to hear. And I have to confess, I did manage to spin Freddie King at 45, an album. I went, wow, Freddie King is really burning up on the fretboard here. And then I realized it was an album that I was playing at 45 RPM. So. But, you know, it made it seem like real, yeah. Right? I mean, that's when people knew I was really on the air, right, if I made a mistake. Which, of course, you know, watching this show, Stephen never does make mistakes. So,
Somehow.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah. It's like a
somehow
flawless kind of thing.
Speaking of moms, I don't know whether I wrote you after I had heard that your mother had passed, but I certainly thought about you a lot after
Thank
that
you.
Happened.
Thank you.
Because you were so helpful to me in a way that you don't know when my mother passed.
Mm-hmm.
Because my mother died at 92, and shortly before she died, we were all, you know, a lot of kids, we were down there basically kind of like loving her, brushing her hair, giving her ice chips, trying to make her comfortable. Mm-hmm. And my sister Margot has just a voice of an angel, was over on the other side of her one day while she was brushing her hair and I was giving my mom ice chips. And my sister Margot started singing All I Have to Do is Dream by the Everly Brothers.
And we sang that together. Yeah.
Right.
Many years back, yeah.
But it was shortly, literally, it was just about a month before she died. You and I sang it together, so I still knew the harmony. And so I harmonized with my sister for my mother, and she was dazzled. Yeah. She was like, is this already heaven? Because my children are singing to me, and I owe that to you. That moment of joy that my mother had in that moment was because you insisted that I learn the harmony to that song.
Well, I'm very glad that we did that.
I'm truly grateful, yeah.
Thank you, thank you. The, truthfully, I think the thing is that we all have to face is some people haven't had that ability to say goodbye in a close way like that. And that, you know, I've come to appreciate that. My when the crisis came for my mum at the end, I was in Vancouver where I had retreated when, you know, I was literally pulled off the stage. They got the hook. I was in the middle of a show in Hammersmith and they said, you can't go on. I said, the music's not that bad. I said, no, really, there's a world crisis approaching, you know.
Right.
No, days later, I was home with the family and on Vancouver Island, and that's where we stayed for a while.
Wow.
In that time, unfortunately, my mum passed. So, like a lot of people, we had the virtual funeral, which was an utterly surreal thing. But so, on Saturday night, thanks to my friends at Defend Vinyl and all of the people that helped me do it, I got to play some music and I got to talk about what I just said. So, you know, I can glad that we can both share that, you know, that moment. And thank you for listening to that because it means a lot to me.
We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, I will ask Elvis about the premiere of Get Back and what it was like to collaborate with Paul McCartney.
Enjoying this episode of The Late Show Pod Show? Then head to cohst.app/lateshow or visit the link in the description to fill out our quick 2-minute survey all about getting to know you.
You and your lovely and talented wife, Diana Krall, went to the London premiere of Get Back, which for the people who have not seen it.
I've not heard you mention that.
What?
Have you seen it, Stephen? I haven't heard you mention that.
I'm slightly obsessed.
Yes.
I'm slightly
I got that feeling. Maybe you will.
Yeah. A little bit. And what was it like to be there? Like, McCartney was there, right?
He was.
Glenn Johns, the engineer.
Paul McCartney was... he actually introduced the film, and I've got to tell you, you know, you most of us that have watched it have seen it on Disney, whatever that is, you know, it's on a relatively small screen or whatever size your TV is. This was in an IMAX theater in the center of London.
Wow.
So, you know, this was some very big Ringo. You know, this was like this was Ringo Max up there.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure.
And Peter Jackson, it was a sort of edited version for the screen.
Yes.
So Peter Jackson spoke about the process of editing and restoring the film. I did notice that he was holding a different Beatle guitar every time they cut to him. Like, he'd be holding a Rickenbacker, then he'd be holding a Hofner bass like Paul played, and then...
Jackson would.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
And as he explained it, they cut to the footage and back to him. And then we watched, like, one of the days of the footage. Mm-hmm. And then most of the rooftop concert. So it was pretty thrilling. The thing, honestly, though, we had the good fortune to go after the screening to the party. And I, you know, the one thing that I noticed at the party were, of course, Paul's daughter, Mary, and Danny Harrison, George's son, and Giles Martin, the son of George Martin. And I thought, how very beautiful for them to see their parents as young people, including the Beatles, you know, who I was like 9 years old when the Beatles hit. I was in their fan club. So for me, it was very strange to be at a party with Paul McCartney and the family.
How hard
observing that?
How weird must it be for you? Because you've written, you've collaborated with Paul McCartney. What's that experience like? Seeing like the way he's collaborating with Paul, with John, that how much they love each other. Like what a love story that is. What's it like to write with him as someone who's been a fan your whole life?
The one thing that I think I had to keep in my mind, that I was me, and he had asked me. He didn't want me to turn up in short trousers and talk about being a fan of the Beatles, you know, when I was a little kid.
That's hard, though.
He wanted me to be, you know, 33 or whatever age I was when I wrote these 15 songs with him. And he was very generous to me. We sat across from each other and we played music. And I dare say there's some similarities to the way we wrote those songs, but we didn't write I Want to Hold Your Hand because, you know, those guys were teenage friends who went to outer space on a mission that we all get to see the end of in Get Back.
Yes.
For me, I'm somebody who was lucky enough to work with Paul. I mean, I met that family when his son ran into my studio in 1982, pursued by his elder sister, pursued by his mother, just like any mischievous kid would just was at work with dad and invaded our studio. And I went, who's that little blonde kid that just ran in? I said, that's James McCartney. That's Stella McCartney. That's Mary McCartney. And this is Linda McCartney. You know, that was a very bizarre moment, but I was 26, 27 when that happened. So I'm not 26 now. I'm 36. And,
And you look
It was a really wonderful thing, I have to say.
Speaking of the creative process and how musicians work, there were a lot of people out there who were saying, they were speculating that Olivia Rodrigo on her song Brutal was lifting parts of Pump It Up, your song. And this was, you know, this was speculated online. And you said very generously, this is fine by me, Billy. It's how rock and roll works. You take the broken pieces of another thrill and make a brand new toy. That's what I did.
Yeah. By the way, that...
Yes.
By the way, I was a bit confused. When I say Billy, I thought I was speaking to Billie Eilish. And I really thought, well, there's a pound out in this. No, obviously, this was somebody that wrote indignantly online. And I don't often write back. But in this case, I did. And the next thing I knew, it was in the newspaper.
Yeah.
Do they still have newspapers? I don't know.
They do.
Yep.
They do.
Anyway, I did think it was a little silly because, obviously, my song, Pump It Up, I don't think you would have to be a genius to work out that I had heard Subterranean Homesick Blues by Bob Dylan, or equally that, you know, Bob had heard Chuck Berry's Too Much Monkey Business. There's songs in between and since that have actually, you know, taken that delivery of quick words over a simple riff, and that's kind of how rock and roll does work.
Is there an artist who you've perhaps... given tribute to the most in your work?
I don't know whether there's one, but it all gets wrapped up, and that's what you hope to do.
We have to take a quick break, but stick around. We'll be right back with Elvis Costello, everybody.
I'm Rachel Martin. After hosting Morning Edition for years, I know that the news can wear you down. So we made a new podcast called Wild Card, where a special deck of cards and a whole bunch of fascinating guests help us sort out what makes life meaningful. It's part game show, part existential deep dive, and it is seriously fun. Join me on Wildcard, wherever you get your podcasts. Only from NPR.
Hey, everybody. We're back with Elvis Costello. You also have an Audible book here, an audio book, How to Play the Guitar and Why. It's available on Audible right now. I'll start with why. Why play the guitar, Elvis Costello?
The key word in this title is play. Is play, but not a play as in a serious thing, because I'm not a... You may have noticed, I'm not a concert pianist. I'm not a, you know, virtuoso violinist. I'm a guitar player that knows a handful of chords I've written a lot of songs. I don't know, 300 or 400 maybe.
Slow Drag with Josephine is pretty complicated.
Well, some of them got a bit more complicated, I'll admit. But
yes.
But I didn't learn that at the start. I had to stumble around on the guitar. Now, here's the theory I have. Anybody who's ever played the guitar in C, which I know I've seen you do, encounters a mechanically nearly impossible chord, the chord of F, the next one you're likely to encounter.
Yes.
And many people in the human race hurl the guitar against the wall, smash it, and then go on a murderous rampage through life, which is why we have dictators and certain types of sadistic kind of
that moment
chiropractor
of defeat.
And, yeah. And, you know, murderers. Mm. They're all ex-guitar players that were frustrated. And so I thought, if I could show people how foolish you have to feel before you learn the few chords that can unlock even a simple three-chord, four-chord song. Once you learn four chords, you can play about 1,000 songs. And once you can do that, you either say, well, you know, I can show off in front of my friends, or maybe I can serenade my true love, or you might go on to write a symphony, as I know you have done. You know, you might want to learn all the chords, and then you can go and study them.
I never got that F bar chord.
Play.
I never got the F bar chord.
Play
is the key word.
Play like a child. Act like a child.
Say that again. I like that.
Play like a child. Like play as a child does.
Yeah.
With joy, and keep the inner idiot alive.
Well, I'm in favor of that.
Yeah.
Holy to be a fool while spring is in the world.
Yes. Whoever said that.
Speaking of the child, the new album is called The Boy Named If. Who is the boy named If?
It's like your imaginary friend, which is a charming invention children make when they're 7 for having broken a cup. Oh, it wasn't me, it was Jimmy, you know, his imaginary friend, or Charlie, or Horace. And then when you get a little older, you start saying, well, I had to stay out till 3 a.m. I had to, you know, I had to sleep with her because she made me. It was my other side. It's the alibi you make for your transgressions. And it's a little less endearing. I think it's a little, you know. So I thought, well, let's follow that story. When you have the guitar in your hands and the F chord isn't holding you back,
yes.
The songs tend to come out of you fast and all the words are dragged out. And I had these songs on the table in the summer of 2020, and I realized that they were, you know, once I'd written them, they were sort of little scenes from different times in life, getting all the way up to being a sort of wretched old scoundrel looking back at all your sinful things.
You also wrote a book of really, really short stories.
Yeah, really short.
Really, like 1-2-page stories to go with it, also called A Boy Named If, 13 Songs and 13 Fables. Which came first? Did the stories come first or did the songs come first?
No, the songs. I really, you see, this thing here, this record album, is what I really love. That would be my way of listening if it were my choice. But it's also great that you can get all the music instantaneously, carry it around with you, all that stuff. We've got to enjoy all of it. You can get a cassette of this record if you want to, you know.
But a double album is the best.
Yeah, a double album, well, they have to split it for the sound over 2 discs, but it's a single record, it's 13 songs. They told me originally that there was a shortage of vinyl, and I was thinking of asking if they could press it on shellac, but...
like the old albums.
Like the old albums, but of course, shellacs are made of Beatles, and we don't really want to... You know, we don't want to kill that many Beatles just to make my record album, so I said...
And highly flammable.
Yeah, highly flammable, those Beatles, those particular ones, double E. And so I thought, well, what would be better than that? Maybe a storybook, because they are sort of like children's stories for grown-ups. And so I did some scribbling drawings and cartoons and did an illustrated storybook is what it is. It's like a children's storybook for adults.
This has been The Late Show Poncho with Stephen Colbert. If you're enjoying The Late Show Poncho, leave us a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Watch The Late Show with Stephen Colbert weeknights at 11:35, 10:35 Central on CBS and Paramount Plus. And for more exclusive Late Show content, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and subscribe to The Late Show on YouTube.
Hey there, it's Michael Costa from The Daily Show on Comedy Central. Ever wonder what happens behind the scenes or want to catch some extended interviews? Well, now you can. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition podcast for full episodes, extended content, and a whole lot more. The Daily Show, Ears Edition is available wherever you get your podcasts.